Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Happiness Is podcast with me, your host, Bruce Aitchison from Happiness Is Egg-Shaped. And it has been a while, but we are back. And who do you come back with? Just somebody outstanding. One of those annoying people that just gets more and more handsome the older he gets. Loved watching him as a player. Ended up coaching with him side by side. Became pretty good mates. Love his attitude. Loved the way he was. The players loved working with him, and then he ended up pulling his boots on at the end of the season as well. Scotland international, sevens international, a man who is very well known and we all love, and we're going to hear all about him, rugby, Six Nations, and probably a little bit more. Here we go with Mr. Alistair Hogg. Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good to see you. Life good?
You know, can't complain. Just you mentioned me there, pulling the boots on for Watsons back in the day. I actually currently coach Alnwick Rugby down in Northumberland. And I also pulled the boots on earlier on in the year. Having turned 40, decided to get the boots back on again in dire straits. It was just end of the farming season. Lots of farmers away, a few injuries, away to Cleckheaton in the pouring rain.
Yes.
So came on for the last 30 minutes to shore it up when it was, I think it was 13-10 to us, and it was chucking it down. Came on at 12. I made made three tackles, no ball carries, and got marched back 10 from the referee. So that was my contribution. But I did bring enthusiasm, brought a lot of enthusiasm.
Did you get marched back for your mouth?
Yes, I questioned the referee's decision for not giving me a holding on penalty, and I got matched back 10. To my team's delight, the review on the following Thursday of watching me getting matched back 10.
Did you get a pint fine after the game or anything like that?
They were desperate to get me back on the bus and have a drive home, but I arranged a lift back from the delights of Cleckheaton. So I managed to avoid that. So I didn't have to do any dirty pints, thankfully, which is good. But they're determined to get me one. So I think I might have to do Scunthorpe away because the head coach is away. So that could be messy.
Scunthorpe away. Cleckheaton, that's John Bentley's club.
It is, yes. So we got changed. It's a cricket pavilion, and then you go across, then onto the rugby pitches below the cricket pavilion. So you go upstairs, and the stairs are like Mount Everest, like so steep. And you go in, and then it's the old sort of wooden benches, but they've got the big long like thick heat pipe underneath all the benches.
Lovely.
So your calves down are roasting, but apart from that, you're freezing. There was two holes in the window where cricket balls have obviously come through at some point, and I've not bothered to fix them. So you've got like roasting calves, but like a gentle breeze coming through with a bit of misting in the rain as well. So it was an experience, shall we say. So we were a bit of a struggle. So I think they were bottom and we were second bottom. So we managed to win that. We went a bit of a run after that, which is quite good. But thankfully, I've not had to put my boots on again.
It's class. I love hearing stories, guys like you that have played at the top, but you're still involved. So you must still love it.
No, it's good. Yeah, good. And it's good. You look at it and you saw the video back, you go, bloody hell, I look old. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally, grey hair. And then after it, one of the guys sent me a photo of me running out of the Falcons holding a little kid's mascot's hand running out. And it turns out I'm running out with, he's probably maybe four or five, the kid I was running out with. And it was actually the winger that started that match. So I was actually, so he then sent me a photo of this a card as well. So I was like, geez, what am I doing? And my wife was saying that as well. I was like, what are you doing? I said, well, you need help. It was like proper dire straits. So hopefully that doesn't happen again. But yeah, no, it's good. It's nice being in and around boys. Like when you get into the real world, you miss the crack and having a laugh and a joke and calling a spade and which is good. So that's kind of why I enjoy it and enjoy sort of giving back a little bit. Boys seem to enjoy it. Well, they tell me they do. They might say other things behind my back, but they seem to enjoy it.
No, I've got no doubt they do. I love those stories, the picture, and then it turns into you end up playing together or you do that. To go and tell me this one, because I've only done it, I think, a couple of times where I've played. Did you tell her that you were going to play, or was it a secret that you were...
Yes, I did say I was going to play because I think we had something on and I had to say I couldn't do it. It was like, look, they really need me to play, so I'm going to go away. So got the bus down, did a quiz, came joint second in the quiz in the bus. I was quite pleased with myself. She knew. So she was, and she just basically, I phoned after her. I'm all right. I survived. No injuries. I was lucky. It was lucky because it was like such a wet day. It was one of those days you didn't want the ball. Like literally all I came on was told the 10, I do not want to see the ball. Can you just kick it as far down the pitch and we'll just chase it? And thankfully we had the wind and the rain. So at our backs the second half and playing down a slight hill. So it was all in my favour. So that was very good at directing, marshalling. Do you mean that sort of coaching the pitches? Yeah, exactly. Experience. Know where to be and where not, and know where not to be. I.e., picking and going. Get yourself away from that.
I love that you brought yourself on at 12. That's class. It's that time of year, Six Nations time. How does that feel? Do you miss it? Are you happy to be a spectator? Are you good at watching?
It's good. It's good. When I first finished, I hated it. Did you mean like I didn't like watching it? Still thought I could play. Well, obviously, I couldn't be. That sort of arrogance as a rugby player. You think, oh, I can still do that. You couldn't really. I remember going back maybe about 8-9 months after a game to go and actually watch Tim Swinson. He was playing for Saracens at the time against Newcastle. And one of my mates, Bobby, were watching it. And I was like, were we this big? Do you know what I mean? I don't remember everyone being so big. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone's just like sort of thick, like twice as deep as you are now. And it was just like, I don't fancy that. And seeing the hits again, you think, nah, I'm too old for that, especially that level. You drop down a couple of levels, it's not as bad, but it's still, there's some big lads. And you think, you know, I think I'm done now. But, you know, I do enjoy watching it and I enjoy sort of going to the pub now and having a few beers, like Saturday. I've got two girls, so they've got sort of sporting events on during the day. So we'll go and watch them. I think Annika got a game at 2, so it should finish, then get back home and normally go and get some pies from local butchers and different things like that, and have a bit of a picky tea and a few beers and get the fire on and watch it at home. So it's quite good. So I do quite enjoy doing that, making a bit of a day of it actually now, and getting involved in that. And so especially Six Nations, and both my girls love watching rugby as well and support it, so it's good fun.
Do you watch it and can sit back and relax, or are you sitting forward with your elbows on your knees and shouting at the referee and telling people what to do, or can you just watch it as a fan?
Just watch it as a fan, to be honest, and then unless they do something really stupid, then you just get frustrated. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, what are you doing? What are you thinking? And especially when they look a bit directionless. This isn't just Scotland. It's, I suppose, any team. You're like, why are they doing that? And as long as it's competitive, that's the thing. Like, you go back to the World Cup, there was probably more sort of like cricket scores than I was expecting, to be honest. But even if it's two evenly matched teams, I think it was at Portugal-Georgia, on a fantastic game. Like, do you know what I mean? They're not two of the top nations, but actually two teams equally matched, but just wanted to have a crack. And like, that was brilliant. Like, that was probably one of my favourite games, that and the Wales-Fiji game. Do you know what I mean? That they were just two brilliantly matched teams, just want to play some rugby. And you just like get excited for it. And then obviously that last pass for Fiji, they should have scored at the end. Like, just like devastated for them as well. And, it's like those that you get carried away with it as though that's your country. And you're like, oh, what are you doing? And really get involved. So I do enjoy that element of it. And then also when Scotland comes, you just get annoyed sometimes as well.
Who do you like watching for Scotland?
I suppose, like, obviously Darcy is just a little bit different, isn't he? Just gets involved, creates something out of nothing. And that's the magic of him as well, obviously. Finn as well, is for the exact same reasons. You don't know what he want to do, and he's the type of player I would love to have played with, because I think you could have fed off him, and if you give him options, he'll find you. And that's sort of using his strengths, and you need people around him that can read the game, because he can read the game very well. And if you've just got big mutants that are not prepared, are just going to run straight, you're not going to get the best out of Finn. So it's very much, you need some good rugby players around about him to bring the best out of him and out the best out of them. So that's why I think him and Darcy link up quite well. And again, that's a creativity edge, rather than just sometimes, I think, say at one point, Scotland was just get as many big people to run into some other big people, which was a bit dull, to be honest. Whereas at least we can play a bit of rugby, which is good to watch.
Do you still keep in touch with the guys you played with? Are they still your mates? Are you on WhatsApp groups? Is there a bit of chat about, oh, I can't believe if Gregor's picked him, or why is he not in the squad?
And not really, no. It's like anything. Obviously, life takes over and goes in different directions. But then it's nice when the Six Nations, if you do go up and see a game, or you go to one of the ex-internationals, and you bump into people you've not seen for years, and you know how you get on, and you sort of reminisce. About it, and time sort of, all that time that's passed sort of disappears, and you sort of take off of where you were, a bit like ourselves, and we spoke for a while and just catched up, and you think, oh, I remember that and done this, and remember when that happened, and remember when he did this and that. And that's what's nice about it as well. And then, as we were just talking about previously, it's very much in the professional world as well. It's amazing how different people pop up, and you see other people, and you go to dinners, you meet people down in London, you end up catching them for a beer, whatever it may be. So no, it's nice, things like that. That's what you enjoy, and that sort of community and network that really is sort of there to lean on and help.
For a long time, you would never have been to Murrayfield as a spectator. So you would have been, and then it became, I suppose, your place of work for quite a long time. What's match day like as a player on Six Nations weekend?
Yeah, it's different, because obviously when we played, we used to stay out at Dalmahoy a bit, so you're a bit out of it at the start. So you were never really in the city centre. You came in to train, but then you left to go back out to Dalmahoy again. But then lastly, you were in the city centre, which is quite nice. Wander around, go for a coffee and catch up with people, which is quite nice. And you can just, it's like any sort of city that hosts it just starts a buzz. You start seeing, closer it gets to the weekend, like down in Cardiff this weekend, you know, you'll start probably from tomorrow, start seeing the odd blue shirt popping up, a bit of a kilt floating around that's taking a couple of days off work to go down 3 days early. But that's it, and he starts to build. And then I suppose latter, one of the times I came up to watch a game, I got the train up from Newcastle, and I got up maybe a few hours early, so I decided to walk to the ground. It was a French game, and it was unbelievable. There was more French people in Edinburgh than there was Scottish, I think, in the walk to the stadium. And there's that sort of real buzz, and everyone's just there to have a good time for the weekend, win, lose or draw, just go out and have a good time, and everyone's sort of socialising together, which is all about, really, isn't it? That's what sport's about, bringing different people together, different walks of life, different nations, and go and sort of be rivals for that 80, 90 minutes, but then go and have a beer afterwards, have a laugh and a joke at each other's expense, and have a good weekend and create some memories.
What was your, I think I know this because I think this is the kind of thing I used to ask you. What was the changing room like when you were a Scotland player? I know there was different groups. There was those that were, you got into the zone in different ways, is maybe the polite way to put it.
Yeah, no, there's different. I was a bit more relaxed. I found out early in my career that if I started thinking about the game too soon, I just got really nervous and nervous energy. And by the time the game came, I was knackered. I was just like sort of emotionally drained and physically knackered, just because I was so nervous and excited. So I tried to sort of not think about the game at all, really, until sort of pretty much the warm up, and sometimes just a little bit before that, and then switch on and go. And I was sort of able to do that, where some boys would just sit down in the corner with music blaring and just go in their own little world. Like, I know Alistair Strokosh, he was one that was always like that, just this quiet, just kept himself to himself, but then didn't really say anything. But then when the game time came, he just kicked into life. And then you got boys that are joking around, mucking around, having a laugh and a joke and reading it through. And I know some people sit and read the programs and try and look for spelling mistakes and any sort of punctuation mistakes, things like that. Just people, loads of people do different things. And then you've got the usual ones that go around punching people and whacking heads off walls and slapping things, and it's got its smelling salts and all that kind of stuff. And it's very much that sort of, as much as you're a team, it's very much an individual prep up until that point. You come together as a team warm up, and then it starts coming more together. But prior to that, and people sort of naturally gravitate to like-minded people, because they know can have a bit of a laugh and a joke, who you can with, who you need to avoid, who likes to get a rub really early, some people like a rub really late. Do you mean it's all those kind of superstitions start kicking in? And then I remember it was strength and condition was getting big, they started making you do some like weights before the game, and I was like, what are we doing here? This is just crazy. Why would we do that? It's like, this is interrupting me having a laugh and a joke with some people, where some people loved it. And it's very much then they started to realize, rather than making everyone do it, they just, if you wanted to do it, you could. I know certainly, what was it called, potentiation or something like that. You're going and do maybe sort of like a few cleans and build up, and a couple of powers is meant to switch you on. I'm playing up doing my back. It was interesting. It's very much an individual thing. But then come sort of warm up, when you're in for that change room, then it's just all eyes and the prize really ready to go.
Standing in the tunnel with 67,500 people at Murrayfield ready to come out, singing the anthem, all those things. How do you stay in the moment, or how are you focused on the game? How do you stop yourself getting swept away in the, I'm playing at Murrayfield for Scotland?
I suppose it's more, you learn to do it the first couple of times, like, wow, this is unbelievable, like, it's just the dream come true. Then it becomes, you have to sort of almost switch off from that part of it. And very much, like, people say, how do you hear things? You completely forget about the crowd. You can feel it, you can hear it, you can sense it, but you don't really pay attention to the same, because you've got so much to focus on and everything's happening so quick. And like rugby that you play at Watson, Stirling County, or wherever it is no different from international rugby. The difference is that they're a lot bigger and everything happens a lot faster. But actually what you try and do in tactic-wise, things are very much the same. They're just executed a lot quicker and a lot better. So there's nothing that's different. It's just that you have to be switched on and you have to be thinking about the next job before you've even done the job you're meant to be doing, and looking ahead of the game and being thinking, actually, where am I best suited next? Especially international rugby, you have to be there. If not, you get caught out. And that's pretty much you can't get too involved in it, because like, back to what I said earlier, if you got nervous and start worrying about thinking about everything else, that's where my head sort of used to go. So actually just almost try and block it out and just hear, have a game of rugby with your mates and try and win. And that's kind of sort of how I tried to focus on it, to be honest. That's kind of how I managed to deal with it.
What game or what moment at Murrayfield would you go back to? Is there one thing? Was there a final whistle or a try or a something that happened that you think, if I could have that moment again, I would be very happy?
I think like 2006 when we won the 2006, I think it was, when we won the Kolkata Cup for the first time there. Like that game was just unbelievable, because I think we'd beaten France first game up, we lost to Wales, but Scott Murray got sent off. We should have won that. We narrowly lost that one, and then we came back to play England. And there was almost an expectation of we should win this. And the atmosphere, it would be nothing like I experienced at Murrayfield before, because it was also an anticipation that we were going to win. And it was quite a close game, and I almost scored in the corner, but it was sort of thick and fast. It was just all over the place. And that sort of, what I remember, that's absolutely, I remember going out, so going back to what you were saying there, but walking out, and it was pitch black. I like it with those sort of nighttime kickoffs when all the lights go out, and there was only sort of back then it was like the purple sort of neon lights under all the stands. And I can remember running out and going, I actually don't know where I'm going, it's pitch black. And then all of a sudden the flames went up, and there's these like Jacobites beating the drums, And you came out and you had to sidestep these guys that were obviously in all sort of face paints, tartan, banging drums and flames going up. And yeah, that was just unbelievable atmosphere. And then the other one, sort of similar to that, was when we played the All Blacks. I think it was that year, 2006 as well. And I think we lost by about 10-15, but we should have scored. We scored a try, but the referee never gave it. He did it held up, but we were really, really competitive. But again, that was Armistice Day. And I still remember, again, switched all the lights off. And a helicopter, I think it was Chinook, came over and just hovered over the stadium. And the only light was on was the big screen with a poppy and the spotlight of that and singing the Flower of Scotland. That was unbelievable. And then I remember Chris Hoy came out to deliver the match ball. I've never seen somebody more pumped for a game of rugby who's not playing a game of rugby. It was Chris Hoy. He was like, he really would have went to war at that very moment. But he was absolutely buzzing, shall we say. Like, he was unbelievable. And I remember chatting to him after it, and he just thought it was unreal because he'd never been sort of in that kind of environment before, I don't think. Obviously, done all his Olympic stuff and things like that, but it was different in that sort of environment. And he was buzzing. They're the sort of two that really sort of stand out for me.
And, you know, you mentioned Cardiff before. Going to those away games when you've got the diehard fans and the people that can afford it and all those kind of things, but was there a special place? Was Cardiff the one, or did you love Dublin, or, you know, was Twickenham the challenge against England? Where did you love to go?
Cardiff. I got my first cap in Cardiff, and I know I was saying to the other one, the press, a couple of colleagues at work sent a nice article to me that was listing the fact that I was the start of the demise of not winning in Cardiff in 2004, which is really nice of them. So reading the articles, listing them, I think it was myself, Chris Custer, Dan Parks, Tom Phillip as well, all got our first caps on that day, and there's not one there since. But for me, Millennium Stadium, like, phenomenal. It's 80,000 people, first cap, running out there, and I can still picture that sort of kickoff, blew the whistle. Well, I didn't even hear the whistle go. I just see Dan Parks kick the ball, and then you had to chase after it. And it was just like a blur. It was unbelievable. Like, I couldn't get over how fast it was. Like, do you mean, people said it is quicker and everything like that, but that was just unbelievable. And it's the first time really that when you're doing line-out calls, you couldn't hear what was happening. You had to sort of go in triggers and you just had to react. And that was, it was just so fast. And that for me is definitely, and if you haven't been to, was it the Principality Stadium now, is it? Yeah. It was Millennium Stadium at those times. It's like a giant game song. That's the only way we can experience it. You know, Murrayfield is a bit of distance between and around the back and stuff like this. Is literally a pitch and then seats all the way up. Which, I mean, it's unbelievable. And that is definitely sort of my favourite stadium I've ever played in by a mile. But it is enjoyable. Even like old, to be fair, we played it, I think it was one of the last games at Old Lansdowne Road as well. Ireland going for the Triple Crown. That was pretty special as well from an atmosphere point of view.
The firsts are things that you meant, like you were able to describe that first kickoff, that first game. Can you remember things like when you were first told you were going to get your first cap, or the first time you walked into a Scotland training session? Like, did you have imposter syndrome, or was it like, no, this is where I belong?
So first cap, I remember obviously they announced the team, and I remember I don't know if they still do, but Chris Patterson wrote me a nice little note and put it under my door the night before the test. I've still got that in my drawer in my office. But then it's very much you remember that. But then I suppose I was sort of very fortunate. I sort of first played for Scotland when I was like 18, I think it was, because I went in tours where we had a really successful under 19s, under 19s, and under 20 one sort of team, and under 19 team. So we had, it was like there was Alistair Strokosh, there was Alistair Dickinson, there was myself, there was sort of Colin Shaw, there was Mark McMillan, there was Dave Callum, there was Tom Phillip, we have Phil Godman. We had, so I think out of the sort of say starting 15, it was about 10 or 12 was actually went on to play for Scotland, so where it was a real good sort of crop, and we did sort of really well at under 19. So it was myself and Tom Phillip got asked to go on the development tour in 2002. So I hadn't actually signed professionally, but I went on tour with Scotland. So it was very much like 18, just like, oh, this sounds exciting, and going across. I remember from my mum to send some money because I'd run out of money going out in the beers Wednesday and Fridays. But Yes, yeah, so, like so from that point of view, first time in Scotland, it was surreal because I never experienced a professional rugby environment at all. And I was like, this is professional rugby. This is amazing. We're going out Wednesday, Saturday, like for 3 weeks in a trot. But it came back down to a bump a little bit when we actually started going. But and having that taste made you want to get more. So actually, when he got picked back in, Matt Williams, it was a bit of a surprise. I'd only been professional maybe a year or so. Two years pretty much full when I got picked, so it was a bit surreal because obviously new coach came in and Matt Williams and decided to sort of shake up a little bit and move I suppose some people on rightly or wrongly, but that was his decision and he gave sort of myself and a few other guys a chance and sort of stuck with us.
And when you look back on those bits and some of those players, when you then go and play against others, you know, you mentioned the All Blacks, you played Wales. Were there people that you were playing against and you thought, wow, I'm playing against them? You know, you were a fan, you were a supporter, and then very quickly you were sharing the field with these people. Was there anyone in the Scotland squad where you thought, I can't believe I'm playing with him?
Yeah, more it was more just Edinburgh. Like he started off and it was Duncan Hodge. Do you know what I mean? I obviously watched them in 2000. Calcutta Cup and in the living room, and then all of a sudden sort of playing with him, and it was like, oh, like it was Craig Joyner, Derek Lee as well. These sort of older guys, you sort of watched a little bit with Scotland, and then you come start playing with them, and obviously Chris Patterson as well. It came in, and then all of a sudden you're teammates, then you're sort of you were sort of peers, and you're learning off them as well. And at the time we had Todd Blackadder there as well. So again, you had a lot of sort of big, well-known rugby players in the world stage as well, and you were peers, which you hadn't been. You had been at school pretty much like the year before, so it was a big change. But then, yeah, then you obviously get in the international stage. You're going across the world and playing against sort of people you've only seen on TV and heard about, and sort of like guys like Stephen Larcombe, Matt Ghetto, or George Gregan, those types of players. And that was sort of real sort of Australia's sort of pinnacle, really, wasn't it? Like, I remember first time I tackled Wendell Saylor, I was like literally running into a concrete pole. It's unbelievable, like so big, and so like you hit him and you think, oh, that's a decent shot. Like, I'm not a big tackler, but I thought I'd actually maybe stopped him with a soak dominant or something like that. But then I literally just kept driving. He was unbelievable.
And those moments that you're throwing those names around, when people, you know, when you had younger players coming in, did you realize that that's maybe what they were thinking about you? Were you ever aware of that?
No. Like I said, I always just tried to, you treat everyone as sort of your peer, and you're there to help them, and you're there to help anyone get better.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And try and coach them or pass on anything on that you can, and maybe a different viewpoint. Try and do that, and so what I do now as well. That actually, from what I do now, you try and maybe come from a different point of view, because I've not done a traditional pathway to sort of being a sort of wealth management. It's very much try and bring that sort of team approach, collaboration, which I think sort of traditionally it's very been sort of singular and people are on sort of siloed on their own, and try to do that when playing rugby, to just try and make everyone better, make the team better. So rather than try and make everyone welcome, you know, especially new guys, people come from all over the world, you know, different environments, different countries, different languages, different cultures, and you try and bring them into sort of the team's culture and make them fit in. Because if people fit in places and enjoy it and trust you, then they're likely more likely to perform.
Was there any young player that came in and you thought they're the real deal? They're going to be really special.
Yeah, a couple. So I thought Ben Cairns was one that I really sort of thought would kick on, and unfortunately he picked up the knee injury as well. And Greg Laidlaw as well. He was in the academy when I was sort of captain at the start and played with him and sort of really sort of championed him. But he was sort of behind Mike Blair at the time, who's obviously British Lion in Scotland, and you could just tell that he had something, he had a bit of a drive, determination, and a real good skill set as well. So those are probably the two that sort of stick in my mind, really, that you kind of know that they'll succeed. And you can tell when sort of young guys, and not so much when I've played with other ones, sort of Hamish Watson. So I remember we played Newcastle versus Edinburgh in a pre-season. We used to sort of do that every year. And the first time I played against him, and it was like, you could tell he was like, just the way that we carried the ball into contact, his strength, his ability to do it around the pitch, he was hard to get off. You just knew he was a quality player. You know, when you play against people, you go, he's good. Do you know what I mean? And you can just sort of see the way they run, the move, and the decisions they make. You can sort of tell who's going to be good and who's sort of maybe a little might struggle a little bit going forward, and especially the way they're physically made up and sort of the attributes they have. You can tell who's going to be good.
When you're at, you know, you went to Falcons, and Newcastle have always had Scottish players from the beginning, and there's still Scottish lads down there now. Cammy Hutch, Murray McCallum. Don't know if I'm missing anybody. Do you make contact with them? Do you have anything to do with them? Do you catch up with them? Are you still involved?
So not still involved. When you got, I was a little bit, so a year or two after I'd left. We saw Bobby Vickers and I sort of hosted the business club, but then that sort of fell away. But I've not really been in touch with many of the guys now. So more of the coaches that are now, so a couple of guys I played with are now coaches. So I sort of catch up with them. But no, not certainly from that front. But you're right, Scott. There was a massive, even when we were at Newcastle, there was like myself. At one point, when Edinburgh were going through their South African phase and the Solomons, there was more Scottish qualified people playing for Newcastle than there was for Edinburgh one weekend. I remember sitting counting and going, because I think at the time there was myself, Scott Lawson, Scott McLeod, Mike Blair, Phil Godman. Then we had Alex Tate, who could qualify for it. There was Michael Tate, who was in the squad as well. And I think there was one other as well. There was somebody else that could qualify for Scotland. It was a bit tedious, but he did generally got so. And I think we had eight playing that weekend that could qualify for Scotland. And I think Edinburgh only had six. I mean, so it was like, actually, we were at one point Scotland's sort of second pro side, which is a bit scary at that point in time.
I didn't know that. I like that. Yeah. So on a Saturday, are you looking out for Edinburgh score and Newcastle score? Are you still a supporter of the teams you played for?
Yeah, still a supporter. Yeah, you obviously going to BBC, see who's won, who results, and even down to sort of like obviously Alnwick playing Stirling County back in the day, try and keep up with it. And obviously Ben Cairns was coaching at County for a little while, so seeing how it's done. Then Scotty Lawson then came over and then obviously won the Super Six last year with County as well, which was brilliant. So it's good to see Eddie Pollock as well getting his name up in lights again, which was nice. He was my first sort of coach at Stirling as well, so it's funny how things sort of come around. He was my 21s coach as well, I think. So yeah, so it's nice to sort of see that as well. So you know, it's good to sort of catching up with those guys as well, nice, and seeing what it is. And you say just watch and see teams you used to play for, play against, so you know people at it as well. So always tend to look out of Gloucester as well, because Chris Harris is down there, and then one of your mates, James Hudson, he's the nutritionist down there, so you always kind of look out for them, so where the Scottish people end up and mates end up. You always sort of want to know how they get on.
Yeah, Eddie Pollock, classes forever.
Yes.
What a boy. And you, County, you know, that was where it started, but basketball nearly took you as well, didn't it? You were one of those annoying huggers that's good at everything.
Yeah, I played a bit of basketball when I was younger. I wouldn't say I was good. I just tried really hard. And it was just very lucky. We had a good school side. So it was out of our school team, there was three of us in it playing up for sort of under-18 Scotland together. And again, I just think we had a very sort of talented year at school and in rugby as well. So it meant that you had a bit of success, and success helps keep people involved and interested, and did that. So, you know, I enjoyed it and still enjoy basketball. My eldest girl, she plays basketball now. So I enjoy going and watching her play and reminiscing, telling her, oh, you don't want to be doing that. This is what you want to be doing. Well, I wouldn't have done that. Do you mean? I used to think all the old people that used to talk and say it wasn't like that my day. Yeah, I've definitely become that as well. Back in the day, what I would have done would have been a bit of a step here, maybe put them on the left hand with a struggle with that. So try and impart some of my wisdom.
I don't know if you remember this, but when we were coaching together, it was a winter where we never trained outside for weeks, and we'd been doing handling and rugby in the games hall, and then you decided, right, I'm going to teach them the three-man weave. Do you remember this?
I still do that now. Basketball. Did it earlier in the year with Annick, because we're getting frozen off. Three-man weave up and down.
Because
you really can't get it.
Like, I know, because that's a bit of whenever I'm looking at basketball and being a PE teacher for a long time, teaching the three-man weave, and you are always in my head, because I'll never forget you turning around and going to me, they've got no transferable skills. You were just like, you'd given them everything, you'd slowed it down, you'd given them repeat demonstration, and then you'd go, right, go, and it would just break down again, and you got to a point where you're like, I can't help them anymore.
Some people just are uncoachable. Or maybe you're going to look at my coaching career. Maybe it depends which way you want to look at it. But it's three-man weave. It's not that hard. Pass forward, then run by the person you passed. He then passes that person, run around the packet, and then it just naturally. It's not a hard drill. Always move forward, never pass backwards.
You were always really positive, because I was miserable. You were always really positive, but that one moment has always stuck with me. When you just turned and went, they've got no transferable skills.
This is, well, you're massive, you can run over the top of people. You can do that.
Yeah. I love it. So Six Nations, Ireland and France are obviously the ones people are thinking about the most. Scotland are saying, you know, we've got a chance. Do you believe that? Do you believe Scotland's got a chance?
No, I think Six Nations is one, and on Friday, to be honest, whoever wins that's probably going to go on and win the Six Nations, potentially the Grand Slam. If Scotland, what would be nice if Scotland or Ireland, right, so if whoever wins it, then if Scotland can beat France on at home again, France don't travel well, then it could be a Grand Slam decider. Do you mean in theory, Ireland last game of the Six Nations, which would be lovely to see, but they've got a couple of hurdles to get across before they do that. And it's very much like Six Nations, if you get the first win under the back, then that sets you up nicely. Where if you lose that one, then you're sort of always looking over your shoulder, and where are you going to get that win? So again, away to Wales this weekend is going to be tough. I think Wales are still in a little bit of transition period, but they've got a lot of young kids coming through, and actually Gatland's a phenomenal coach. You'll have them going and playing towards this game plan, and they'll come out absolutely flying. So it's a tough one to call, but I think Scotland could edge that. Do you mean Glasgow are going very well? Edinburgh have had a couple of good wins as well recently. So if Gregor can get them going, then I think it is doable. But yeah, it's going to be a tough ask. But I think if they can, I think they can beat England at home. But it's that French game. If they win that, then it could be interesting.
It's the hope that kills us.
Yes, yeah, it's true. It's the eternal Scottish supporter as well. It's in football, rugby, any sport that Scotland partake in. They just,
I would love to believe. When you were sitting in team meetings and, you know, first squad session and before the Six Nations kicks off, was it always like, we can win this, boys? Was that always the mantra? Or
yeah, definitely. You got to go in that and win it. And I still remember, going back to that All Blacks game that we played, I can still remember what Frank Haddon did. It was brilliant. I thought, like, looking back at it now as a coach and thinking, actually, how do you motivate players? You're playing against the All Blacks, number one in the world, haven't lost for however long. And he pretty much, our pre-match analysis of New Zealand was, he pretty much put on about a 6-7 minute clip of them just making mistakes, like knocking the ball on, dropping it, whatever it may be. And in 6-7 minutes, he goes, lads, they make mistakes. right, let's go out and train. And that was it. That was all the pre-match we did. And it was just that sort of psyche just changing it, going, yeah, they're very, very good, but they're no different from you. Just go out there and perform. And that you've got to believe that. And no matter what sport you do or anything, you've got to go out there and believe that you're better than your opposite person and believe that you can make a difference. And if you don't, then there's not really much point in going out there and being it. And you, as being a rugby player and any professional athlete, you're obviously competitive. So you've also got that little bit of arrogance that you think you can win it. So yeah, you're always going to think you believe you can. When you're 60 points down with 5 minutes to go, slightly different kettle of fish. But then, but definitely at the first whistle, then you've got to go for it.
Do you think we're going to live to see Scotland beat the All Blacks?
I think we will do. I think we've been close a couple of times. When would they have been? I don't know.
Four years ago,
we had that sort of good chance to do it, and yeah, especially end of the seasons, it's a long old season for New Zealand, and we're kind of coming into the sort of start of it come autumn internationals. Then there's no reason why you can't sneak a little win at some point.
Yeah, good. Okay, I like that. I'll take that. So Ireland, France, you reckon are there players that you look at in those squads and get excited about? Like, are there people you love to watch? So there's some obvious ones in both those squads, but is there anybody that gets you excited?
Yeah, I think Pueno in the wing for France is just unbelievable. Like, I love watching him play. He's just so rogue, but yeah, he's just so hard to tackle. I mean, you don't know where, I don't think he knows where he's going, but he creates something out of nothing all the time, and he's brilliant to watch. I'd happily pay to go and watch him play. I think he's a great attacker as well. And then with Ireland as well, I think obviously with Sexton dropping out, it's going to be interesting to see how they carry on. But there's just such a well-drilled site, and actually how they go about their business. And no matter sort of who you take out and put in again, that they just seem to perform all the time. And actually, they tend to sort of put in the sort of really ultimate team performances. So no, certainly for me, it's very much doing that sort of team performance and the way they work together and actually how well thought out it is with Ireland. So it'll be interesting to see how they all sort of, I suppose, the new era without Johnny Sexton. So look forward to seeing them play, but I think it should be a really good game. It's always a bit scrappy, so which I think could suit France a little bit with it being in France as well, isn't it? So it's going to be, I actually think France could win that with it being in France and just being a little bit scrappy, being the first hit out, and they probably just maybe got the better sort of broken field players compared to Ireland.
What do you think about DuPont wanting to play sevens and going to the Olympics?
Yeah, if I had the skill set, I probably would have done the same as well. If I was that big time, I could say that I didn't need to play for my country in the Six Nations. Sadly, I was never that good. But why not? Do you mean it happens? It's probably the only time we'll get to do it in his career. He's a class player. He's got, again, pace, strength, the unbelievable skill set to slot into that as well. And not many people get to go to the Olympics. And naturally, you see the sort of French side, they've got a good chance of coming away with a medal. Who would want an Olympic medal? So fair play to him. I don't know why he can't sort of do the Six Nations and that as well. But it's obviously maybe the decision's been taken out of his hands. But yeah, fair play. Why not?
Your sevens career was not funny, but because you went for it, but you kind of fell into it, didn't you?
It was more Scotland had sort of poor run, and they were having this. It was the first time they're hosting it at Murrayfield, I think, or the second time they're hosting it. So they wanted to bring in a couple of other players.
It was absolutely beautiful.
It was lovely,
blue
yeah.
sky and sunshine. It was exactly how God intended.
Yeah. So my international sevens career was very exotic. I played Edinburgh, London, and then the following year I played Edinburgh and London, and never got to basically leave the British Isles. Which is a bit disappointing. It was almost a chance I went to Hong Kong, but then I got too fit and then I played for Edinburgh rather than going to Hong Kong. It was disappointing. But, I loved it. Like, generally, if I'd got the chance to play a bit earlier in my career, I think I just loved the fact that it was a smaller squad. Like, it only lasted 14 minutes, but it was basically balls out. I mean, that was what it was. And I loved the fact that you're a bit more of a close-knit team, and your skills were sort of put on on show, and you had to be sort of on point all the time, which I really enjoyed. And we did all right, actually, to be fair. Mm-hmm. Which was brilliant. So, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Class. And you used to love chucking a ball around. Would you have fancied doing what Lewis Rees-Zammit's done and head off to NFL for a bit?
Yeah, I would love. Like, do you mean love that? But like, they're all athletes, and I'm not an athlete. I was quite good at rugby, but I don't think I physically would be capable of doing that. Wasn't particularly fast. Wasn't particularly strong. I still yet to understand how I became a professional rugby player, but yeah, again, for him, exactly, why not? This opportunity comes, he's still young. Was he 22? He goes and does that for a year, 18 months, doesn't work out, he's made some money, he's tried something new, he comes back and he'll get snapped up. Do you mean, again, he's an athlete, he's a bit of an X factor, he could easily walk into any team. So for me, again, why not? And I think that's pretty decent. Like, again, Gloucester saying, look, we'll let you go and live your dream. And do that. So fair play to Gloss as well to sort of agree to release him. But yeah, I wish all the best for him. Who won't do it? Christian Wade did it, and yes, he maybe didn't kick on, but then he scored that touchdown in his first game, which everyone went crazy for. But then again, he's got that experience. I mean, not many people go when they're like you and I, old and decrepit, go, I played in the NFL or I played this. Do you know what I mean? So that, like, for me, why not? Like, you've got the chance to do it. It's amazing.
Have you watched any of the Netflix series?
I've not. As in, what was it called again? I watched them years ago, but I've not watched any of them recently. I want to say Hard Knocks, but it's not.
No, the Full Contact one, the Six Nations one.
No, I've not watched any of that, no. Don't have Netflix. Too tight to pay for Netflix. Still got my free Disney Plus for when I bought something. So the girls watch that. I need to get Encanto, so that's why I got Disney Plus. live the dream.
How would you have felt with having a camera crew following you around? Would you have enjoyed that experience?
I don't know. It's strange. I mean, like, we didn't really have, like, when I was playing for Scotland, you didn't really have social media then. It was about a little bit, but I think, to be honest, I didn't think I wasn't even on social media when I played for Scotland. I think it sort of came about after I'd finished. It's sounding pretty old now, but yeah, it's just a completely different way of doing it. But I think that's the nature of it. That's how you market rugby. That's how you create personalities. It's how you grow the game and how you get people interested in buying into it. And if that's what they have to do to, I suppose, the professional game to survive, then I'm all for it, to be fair. I suppose you've just got to be careful about what kind of access it is and what goes on and what's get aired and what's not. But I think it's a good thing. I mean, you see sort of the exposure it's given other sports, then why not? If we can create personalities and give boys opportunities in June rugby time when they're playing, but then also post rugby and grow a profile for them, then why not?
Who from your playing days do you think would have been a Netflix star? Who would have been the one to have the camera follow them home?
Oh, you'd have been Chunk. Chunk would have been outstanding. Scotty McLeod, Scotty Murray would have been good as well. They'd have been some good characters there as well.
When Hoggy, there's a bit with Stuart Hogg on the Netflix thing, and he's walking with his dad, and because his dad's Hoik, it's subtitled.
Yeah.
They would need that for Chunk, but they'd probably need the bleeper as well.
Yeah, he'd been good. He'd been good for, he's always good for a one-liner, Chunk, and just been big with him. I know Big Jim doesn't know, but Big Jim would have been good. You see why he's been successful and what he does. But even when he was playing, he'd have been similar, just coming out with some stupid one-liners or whatever it may be. It was good.
Do you think Chunk would cut it now?
No, he was probably one of the last of that sort of type of breed of props. Him and the Jones brothers in Wales, they were sort of similar ilk. Every time you went away to Wales and they came up here, the three of them would just disappear in a boozer somewhere. It's a slightly different game. You've got it, but then fair play Chunk, he wasn't as sort of like an athlete, but he was an absolute workhorse. I mean, he literally was a little barrel, and he did it when he was fit. He fly around. For the size of him, he was phenomenally fit, and he got around and scrummaging, and he did everything he wanted to do, and he had some great hands as well. People maybe didn't give enough credit for, actually his skill set was very, very good, and actually he would potentially fit in a bit more now than certainly he did back then. There's probably more expected of props now than there was back then, and that's what sort of Chunk offered at that point. And he'd quite easily be able to pull the ball back in, be sort of pivot as well. So no, I think he would still do a job.
Class act, timeless. Are you excited for the future? Do you think the future for rugby is bright?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's certainly from I've been down in England and hearing a bit more about it. It's certainly in a slightly different place than certainly sort of up in Scotland and Ireland, and Wales is probably a similar boat to England a little bit as well. Just trying to get that funding structure right, and again back to the Netflix thing is how we grow, how we make it more accessible, how do you get more money injected into it, and it's building that commerciality of it as well, and not just sort of playing the London clubs, and getting sort of grassroots in and around it sort of growing and getting people to buy into it and make it affordable as well. That's the other thing as well, is to go and watch Scotland now. Do you mean as a family? Do you mean if I want to take my kids up and go for that, you're pretty much not shy of £400 before I've even bought a train ticket, driven up, parked the car, bought some food, bought some drinks. Do you mean you're talking about £1,000, not far off or a bit less, before just to watch a game of rugby. So it's probably getting that accessibility for everybody, really. That's going to be the tough part of it, and getting that pricing right to get people to come through the door and buy into it, really.
So we've got Six Nations in front of us. This is going out before Scotland have kicked the ball. Where are they going to finish?
I think they can finish third. I think they'll finish behind France and Ireland. I think they win against Wales. I think they win by maybe sort of six down there. I think they could do it. I just think they're more settled side, and they've got a decent amount of experience in there now as well, and know sort of how to win away in the road, which is probably which lacked a little bit in the last sort of prior to sort of wins of France and England. Just get that sort of that win in Wales will sort of build from there and builds that confidence. So yeah, I think France and Ireland maybe a stretch too far, but I think they can comfortably beat everyone else.
I like it. So third, that's a success, you reckon, finishing third?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you're up against the top two teams in the world pretty much, aren't you? So two of the top three. Mm. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, Ireland were the form team going to the World Cup, and so were France as well. So the fact it was New Zealand, you could have happily had France Ireland final or a New Zealand South Africa final, so you would have been unhappy either way. And they're the four teams that produce some phenomenal games at the World Cup. I don't see it being any different on Friday night. It might be a little bit scrappy just because they've not played, but I still think that they're going to be the two of the top sides in the world.
So you're going to be watching everything, watch all the games?
Yes. So no, it's good. Yeah. Maybe just hopefully just get to the pub and watch a couple, have a few beers, enjoy it, and hopefully toast a couple of victories for Scotland.
Nice. I love it. Hoggy, always a pleasure. Good to see you. I'm hoping I'll see you in the flesh at some point soon. Keep up the good work with Anik.
Yep. Hopefully survive this year. Hopefully I don't need to get Anik back on.
Happy days, didn't it? I think I won Anik's pre-season tournament once. Great club.
Under 10s, loads
of good people.
Yeah, no, it's a proper rugby club. That's what I love about it. Actually, it's a proper club. Everyone's sort of local farmers coming up from sort of pretty much Baldur's down and up the way as well, and all just local lads. And do you mean they're putting out three teams at the weekend, plus an under-18s, plus a women's side? Do you mean it's phenomenal? So somebody's got five teams going out at the weekend for such a small place. The fact that everyone just buys into it, and you got a clubhouse. Sometimes you've got sort of 100 and odd people down on a Thursday night training, so it's a proper old rugby club, which is nice.
Class, love it. Right, I'm going to come and visit. Good to see you, my man. Look after yourself.
Cool. Thank you. Take care.
Gotta love it, Ali Hogg. What a man! If you enjoyed it, you can catch us on Apple, Acast, and Spotify. You can watch on Facebook and YouTube. Tell your friends. Leave us a review. Who knows? Big day coming up with the results of the Sports Podcast Awards. We got shortlisted. We're in with some big hitters, but
maybe a third place finish for us would be a success as well. Hopefully we'll see you all very, very soon. In the meantime, enjoy the Six Nations and we'll be back with more very, very soon. Look after yourselves. My name is Bruce Aitchison from the Happiness Is podcast. My happiness is egg-shaped.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.